Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. I have a great show tonight. I'm really excited. My guest, Don Alder, is in town for the NAMM show. He hails from Canada. And he brought something in I'm going to talk about in a minute that just blew me away, that he has set up on one of his guitars. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But before we start, let me play a clip to kind of give you an idea a little bit about Don's playing. And we're going to get into detail about his technique and what his style and influences. So this is from his new album called Armed and Dangerous. And this is called Going Rogue. Take a listen. That's amazing. That's his tone. Welcome to the show, Don. It's a pleasure. And it gives you an idea of some of the different styles and everything that he uses in his playing. And we're going to see in some of the other clips, there's more than just, even with just acoustic guitar, some of these clips I'm going to play you from his album feature electric guitars too, and harp guitar and baritone guitar. So let's just start out real quick and get a brief summary of, you know, where you got to where you are now, your influences and how you started.
Great. Well, first, good to be here with Jeff, and awesome to be hanging with you in L.A. And, I think, first, I just want to say, when you had the opening of your show, I heard three little great guitar pieces, and I'm guessing that's you?
Yeah, no, I did some, those are from sessions that I did over the years.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Sweet.
Thank you.
So, I guess I was a young kid, like many young kids, and I had gone to see the Woodstock movie and saw Jimi Hendrix play that jazzy piece after the Star Spangled Banner song you played.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just smitten. Also saw Albert Lee for the 10 years after, and just had to kind of get into guitar. So initially, you know, poor family and stuff like that, so I got an acoustic and just started learning on my own.
Mm-hmm.
I had a guy that I rented that kind of taught me some Gordon Lightfoot songs.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just finger-picking on from there. But the thing was, is back then, you know, I lived in a small town, and there country music wasn't even country music back then. It was called Western music.
Oh, okay.
So we had Roy Rogers, this is pre-Willie Nelson. So when I was doing any of the fingerstyle stuff, people thought I was on drugs or something. So basically, I got into band mode and, you know, did all of the rock things.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
was huge into rock. And Black Sabbath was our main band.
Mm-hmm.
And matter of fact, that's how my rock career ended, because I was in a band and we had to have an ideas night. And everybody brought an idea, except the bass player and I had our shotguns, because in a small town, we used to go hunting for birds back then, right? So we decided we were going to shoot our guitars with confetti, shotgun shells. So we took the pellets out and stuffed back confetti back in. And the big night came, and we had our strobe lights going and this fog machine going, and the two guys did their things, and then it was our turn. So we, in very gothic style, we walked off the stage and kind of came back in, grabbed the shotguns, walked back out like militant guys, crossed our shotguns, pointed them at our guitars and shot, and then we had a second shot. But what's interesting is we tested these shots out in the daytime, and everything looked fine, right? No problem. We're like, yeah, we're going to shoot our guitars with confetti. And so now the first shot come out, and I'm seeing flames come out of the gun, and I'm going, that doesn't look right, but it's all happening so fast.
Yeah.
So now we lift our shotguns up, and they're crossed, and I'm aiming at the guitar player, and, of course, the bass player's aiming at the drummer. So our next shot was for our band members, and we thought, this would be fun, shooting them with confetti. It'd be a great show, right? And all I remember is the guitar player going flying into his Marshall stack, and the drummer going flying off his drum stool. And I guess what happened is the thing in the end that holds all the pellets in came out, the wad came flying out, gave them the big welt, followed by flaming gunpowder, and followed by confetti on fire. And so, needless to say, you got like bad burns and stuff like that. And we had to call the police over, and luckily nobody got hurt.
What did the audience do?
Well, this was pre-audience.
Oh,
we were in the basement. So, but what the thing? You know what's funny about kids is that, you know, if you have your bicycle and you're driving along and running some bullies, it's like, and they're harassing you. You got like, beat me up, but don't touch my bike, right? It's that sense
mm-hmm.
of property.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is we went back downstairs and looked, and I guess the first wad must have bounced off the guitar and went through the bass drum of the drum, both drums, the bass drum, and so the band ended that night. The welt and the burn didn't matter to him, but the fact that, you know, we destroyed his bass drum skins, it was like band over.
Oh, I could understand.
This is pre-YouTube. It was like, we need that video.
Well, being American-born, I don't know. It's interesting hearing people from other countries, you know, growing up in the music. Was American music and British music,
yeah.
was all of that really accessible? Was there a lot of radio where you were, or was it pretty sparse?
It was. I mean, I was living in a town where it was like a little bit more conditioned than what we heard. But I mean, I was into Black Sabbath and stuff. And then I learned about Wishbone Ash, who's been my band forever.
Mm-hmm.
Just phenomenal guitar playing in there. And then, of course, in Canada, we always on the radio, it was Bruce Coburn and Joni Mitchell. So that's when I got into the fingerstyle stuff a bit more,
right.
by watching Bruce. And the thing is I didn't know about altered tuning at that point, and so I could never learn one of his songs. And then one day I was untuned and I started playing, and I like, oh, now I get it. And so it's been a journey ever.
It's funny you mentioned Wishbone Ash, because I posted on NMB Live. It's another social media type of thing, and there's a Wishbone Ash. There's Wishbone Ashes on there, and they spotted this. The post I posted of your show, and they're like, yeah, you know.
Ooh.
So you got fans with Wishbone Ash. I thought that's kind of cool.
Wow, that's very cool. I mean, yeah, Lori Weisfield and Andy Powell and those guys are all, I will love them to death forever. I mean, it's funny because they've disappeared a little bit, but
mm-hmm.
there's more in those guitar albums of 10 years than you'll
mm-hmm.
find anywhere, right? And just amazing, amazing stuff.
No, that's great. So, okay, so you had mentioned Joni Mitchell. So Black Sabbath. So you definitely have a rock attitude, which is
yeah,
great.
Always.
That's always great. But now, Tell me more. How did you get more into the acoustic guitar, and what were your influences?
Yeah, well, I mean, after that, when the band kind of split up, I just started, you know, messing around and noodling, and just kept going down the journey of trying to write songs. And then up in about 1985, about 82, I got to work in a recording studio. So at this point, I'm just noodling and having tons of different little bits and pieces, but not really putting a song together.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, you know, doing this stuff, people thought it was like stuff for cafe music. So what I ended up in 85, I put my music career on hold and helped a friend go around the world in a wheelchair. And a guy by the name of Rick Hansen.
Mm-hmm.
And this journey took 2.5 years. And he wheeled 24,901.55 miles, the circumference of the planet. And when we got back home, he had raised by $26 million at that point. Now, one of the songs that we got on that tour, I kind of helped launch, because I told Rick, we need like a theme song for this tour. And he said, yeah, who should we get? And I laughingly said, David Foster. Because David Foster had that Double Earth, Wind & Fire album at that time, right? And so he said, yeah, let's get him. And I'm going, would you want me to call Madonna at the same time, dude? And yeah. And who else should I call? But one thing led to the next, and next thing you know, we're wheeling down Santa Monica, and this car pulls up beside us, and Rick goes, who's that pervert in the car? And I'm looking, and I'm going, oh, man, that's David Foster. He goes, who? And I said, blah, blah, blah. And he said, oh, okay, good. So we pulled over and chatted with him, and he invited us into Lionshare Studio with Humberto Gattaca. And he released a song called St. Elmo's Fire. And if you listen to the words, it's, I want to be a man in motion, I want to grab these pair of wheels. And our tour was called Rick Hansen's Man in Motion, and his wheel is symbolic of, you know.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah, the director of the movie, I think, never figured out what was going on, but it was a big hit in Canada.
So. Big hit here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great song.
Yeah.
That's one of his, that's great.
So, post-tour, you know, I had listened to a lot of different things that Rick had said, but one that kind of resonated with me is that when he did his presentations, I would be his kind of right-hand guy doing all the logistics and running that computer stuff for him. But this one time he said, you know, Donnie, he said, a lot of times people don't pursue their dreams because of fear of failure. And failure is just not having the courage to try. And I thought about that and went, actually, all I have to do is try a little bit and stick it out there. So what I did is I started entering the competitions. First time around, I got my butt kicked. But then I saw what was required and what I had to go home and do. And then all of a sudden, it was in 2007, I had won the International Fingerstyle Championship.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2010, I think I won Guitar Player Magazine's Guitar Superstar Contest.
Oh, great. Yeah.
And then 2011, the Worldwide Guitar Idol. So, and what's funny is I can't really read or write music. And all these other contestants were definitely far superior players than I'll ever be. But I think I just came out and played with heart and was fierce in what I was doing and owning it. And I think that's what they weren't doing. They were being too virtuosic on stage.
Well, for a person that hasn't studied theory and stuff, listening to this last album, Armed and Dangerous, harmonically, you have an interesting ear, and you go some interesting places.
Thanks,
in what you're doing in there. And then also, too, I mean, you're just the construction of your songs and stuff. I mean, there's a sophistication there. Obviously, you've been listening a lot. So,
well, that's one thing I have done. I've listened to like Frank Zappa's music, Wishbone Ash, Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Oh, there you go.
Lee Ritenour. You know.
All right, you had mentioned Joni Mitchell. We'll talk a little bit. You said you had a story about Joni Mitchell.
Yeah.
I'm going to play this piece, even though it's called Circuitous?
Circuitous, yeah.
Circuitous. My pronunciation's bad. Anyway, I edited two pieces. This is kind of out of context a little bit. You'll catch it, but it kind of shows some very interesting stuff. But it reminded me of that style, like Joni would use on some of her later albums. And so I'll play that. But it's really cool, and well, let me just play it and let you guys hear this, what's going on.
Sure.
Now, it's interesting. I pulled two clips. One was at near the beginning, and the other one's in the middle. And that song, every eight bars or so, it just, there's really cool stuff happening. It was very difficult to try to grab something. And even that clip was about 2 minutes. I mean, the song's a little long, but everything in there was interesting. And it's just harmonically what you're doing and the tap, the percussiveness of the guitar, all of that stuff. It's just, I mean, for a guy that doesn't read, I'd never know.
Thanks. Thank you.
But let me ask you, let's get in a little bit. First of all, the pieces that we played, all right, let's talk about the guitars that you used, because
sure.
The sound of that, of your guitar, is just unique. I mean, it's a beautiful, clear, resonant sound with a lot of overtones. So,
yeah, for the album, I wanted to have a lot of different colors on it. And I'm a Yamaha artist, so for some of the songs, I used two Yamaha hot yaws. I used my little kind of small one here, the AC35R.
That's the one you have here. Also, too, I just want to mention Andy and Armando from Yamaha said,
plug the
go card. Yamaha. Yeah.
There you go, Armando. AC3R. It's a killer. I mean, it's like for best bang for your buck and a great little stage guitar. But the other guitar I've used was the new black LL16D. And these are the handcrafted ones that they brought to the States, but it's really cost effective. So it's a great guitar. But I also use baritones on this, some of these mm-hmm. songs. But Yamaha doesn't make a baritone at this point, and they couldn't really get me one. So
So what do you use? What did you use on? Because I'm going to show some pieces.
Yeah, I use the River Song baritone. Recently I became an artist for them as a baritone artist. And they've made this very, very unique baritone that's fan fretted. And it's got a thing called the slap in it. And it's this round kind of circular thing that mounts inside the guitar, attached with this little device on it that when you hit the guitar, it gives this very low frequency without other frequencies intruding on it too. Because if you have a microphone and you're doing this, in order to get that sound, you have to turn the mic up, then your strings start getting brittle.
Right.
So that's the kind of concept behind it. So it's pretty neat. So I use that guitar for the baritone songs.
Mm-hmm. And then you also use a harp guitar.
I do. One of the songs actually, I usually put about two or three harp guitar songs on. And basically, I'm a Dyer artist with Scott Holloway. And that's
how actually, Dyer, how do you spell it?
D-Y-E-R.
Dyer harp guitars.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it's a great, great California story. You know, you have a young guy here by the name of Scott Holloway, or Scott Burwell, and he's been in love with harp guitars forever, and he's trying to revive a whole culture and make it come back, because they're a phenomenal instrument. And he's been incredible at doing it. And he'll be at the NAMM show, and he's just doing a major launch right now. And he's got artists like Andy McKee, Stephen Bennett, and they're like the forefront players of harp guitar. So it's a great instrument. It gives you, the beauty for me is that while I can't read or write music, when I was a studio guy for a while, because the producer of the studio liked the colors I came up with, and he could mold me to what he needed. So he would show me, you know, note-wise what was required. But the big thing I learned from him one day is that, you know, he took a regular C chord within the octave, and he said, Don, so this is a CEG, or C chord.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, now watch what happens. I'm going to take the E note out, and I'm going to drop it like two octaves down. So you have the same chord. One sounds tight, and the other one sounds open and spacious. Mm-hmm. And so that's what resonated with me, and that's how I've kind of driven my playing, is looking for those big spaces. And the harp guitars allow me to do that. So now I can actually grab a chord. I don't have it out here, so I should sorry. But you can do that spacing, and it's really wonderful. You can't do that guitar.
Now, I know you don't have the harp guitar here, but let me ask.
I do, yeah, it's in there, but it's in the bag. So.
Oh, okay,
so.
Because the when you're playing, especially now, when you're playing harp guitar, are you as percussive as you are on your other guitars? Because those, I would think when you hit, you have those sympathetic strings, or are they sympathetic strings?
No, they're actually not. There's six sub-bass strings, and they're not fretted. Okay. And because they're not fretted, that's why it's classified as a harp guitar, because they're freestanding strings. So you get six bass notes. And that's why you have to work a strategy around it. Now, the songs I've actually written on, I got a couple of kind of percussive songs, but mostly I've been looking for those strong voicings and spacings, so I haven't focused on the percussion. And they're mostly slower songs I'm doing on it.
But don't you have a problem with that, with resonance? I mean, when you're playing, you know, one of the bass strings that you don't want might start vibrating. So how do you...
And that's the hard part of the instrument, because you're kind of resting your hand on all the strings, your wrist.
Oh, okay.
And you're kind of, as you hit a note, you're kind of trying to listen to when you're going to dampen it mm-hmm. and get it out so it doesn't kind of collide with the next chord you're playing, right? And that takes a while. I'm not perfect at it yet, but that's the strategy you try to mute, because the whole instrument, even when you play the six-string side and you're muting, mm-hmm. you can hear all that resonance taken inside, placed inside the instrument.
I mean, they're beautiful. I've heard Muriel Anderson
she's great.
Working with it, and it's a great sound. Yeah. But let's talk a little bit about your technique.
Sure.
And how you build it, because you use a combination of like a very percussive thing, whether you're hitting the guitar
yeah.
or the strings, and then you're doing a lot of pull-offs and slides and then harmonic, beautiful harmonic work. Yeah. So can you break it
sure.
down?
Sure, I can. I mean, the biggest thing for me that happened is that what gave me my style is that, and getting back to the wheelchair thing with this Rick Hansen guy, is that post-tour, I started playing wheelchair basketball. And these basketball chairs have cambered wheels that are slanted.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was playing and my hand pushing over the wheel, my thumb would jam inside my pant pocket to the point where it was almost sprained, but not like strained, right? So to this very day, when I kind of move my thumb up and down, it hurts. So I can't really do that nice classical technique. So what evolved is more of a strumming style. And now that I'm strumming, mm-hmm. I can kind of pick with the fingers, right? And so what I can do is I can go back and forth with these nails. And typically, finger pickers are always plucking up, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't do downstroke. So because of that, I get some advantages. The problem with it, though, is it's a bit more brittle sounding.
Mm-hmm.
But for speed, it's great. And so I can do this kind of back and forth with frailing or... And if you notice, my hand's swinging. So the next part of this is that if you search around in the guitar, you can find different percussive spots. So right in this area, I'm getting a kind of a kick simulation, right? Now, if I take away the kick and I just go with the thumb, I'm just getting the bass note. So because I'm swinging the wrists like I'd be strumming, now I'm going to put them both together and I'm going to get a
yeah,
more
so you're
sound.
Hitting the top at the same time.
Yeah. And you're... So now if I swing out, I can get a snare sound on there, right? And you can get all these kind of like, eight note triplet kind of percussive effects. When I saw the flamenco guys, they do this like rasgueado or something like that.
Yeah. And you kind of do a rasgueado when you do that fast.
It is, but they're doing it on strings only. What I want to do is have a kick, snare, and then a muted hi-hat. So then I kind of
Now you're plucking up when you pluck
yeah.
up. But do you like
no.
move your fingers down and
no.
It's like that, like that.
Yeah, no, I've not really... Why I don't do that is because I see it overdone so much. So my way is this way.
Yeah.
And as soon as I see a technique out there that's too similar to what I'm doing, I try to switch gears as quick as possible.
It's interesting because a friend of mine, another guitar player, and he's also my dentist. I had to go to the dentist, and he always plays music videos. He's a great dentist because we look at music all the time. He had a tape of Preston Reed, and he was talking about hitting the different spots.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're hitting the bottom. Do you ever hit the side?
I do. So the strategy is that, if I'm doing, and I need to get to the strings, I'll find a different snare, and I'll find a different kick.
So he's hitting at the cutaway of the guitar.
Yeah, he'll come up here.
Okay.
He does this kind of
yeah
over the top, right? Which is the same thing Andy does, right? So I'll do this for certain songs. But in other songs, I'll do it here. Like, I'm doing fast stuff.
Well, when you hit your palm on the top of the guitar,
yeah.
that's like a really tight kick drum to me. I mean, it's just yeah. deep. Now, he's playing through my mic. I'm just miking him with my two Audio Technica mics, so you know that's it. I don't have him electronically, and we're not using his pickup.
Yeah.
And listen how deep it is. That's amazing. I mean, to me, that's coming through really good.
Yeah. Now, see, if I'm doing this down here, it's a nicer sound. Like, there's more snap to it. Now I can't do the...
Yeah.
So this way it allows me to kind of do both, right? But, getting down to it, so when you start off your bass and kick,
mm-hmm.
now the idea is you'd add a bass note. And at the end of the day, you're going to try simulating a whole band. But you can't. But you can simulate, right? So I'll do that, the kick and snare. And now I'll kind of... throw a bass line in. So you got bass and drums and basic bass. So the idea now is to throw a melody in with some chords. So I'll... That's kind of the general idea.
That's amazing. I mean, you're and your sense of rhythm, you do some really complex, interesting counterpunctal things.
Thanks.
And that last piece that I played, you're doing some little more, melodic things that kind of counterbalance to what it's going. So it's kind of almost like answering it,
yeah.
Where you're going back and forth. And then the harmonics. I love the harmonics.
Sweet. I mean, you know, one of the things with the whole rhythm thing, the beauty is that typically in the past, guitar players have moved their right hand with their left hand. And now the new modern players trying to do these polyrhythms where you can have both hands doing something. Because the left hand, on the back of the neck, in the front of the neck, muted, you can get all sorts of percussion. So you're getting these guys doing all these very, very great things. And while I've done all this, I've not been able to really express it as much until I saw Tommy Emmanuel do Day Tripper. And I went, okay, now I know, need to know what I do. And so what he does is he has the thumb playing the melody, and then the... on the B and E string, he's just doing a constant 8th note. And so when you think about it, if you went, and you're keeping that left hand going constant, you can't stop that, right? But people want to double up. And every time I do workshops with guitar players, they don't have that ability. They want to double up in the hands, right? They're not used to the pauses. And so it's a great exercise. But anyways, you can take it a step further and kind of go into the right hand and say, okay, well, I'm going to take these three fingers and I'm going to do a da, 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 da. And I'm going to take the index finger now and I'm going to tap out the melody. So let's hope I can do this. So that's to break out there. But here's the magic, is when you can take the thumb and make it become independent, now you can do all sorts of things. So the idea
is... He's doing this with one hand.
Yeah.
He's playing right now.
So now I'll take the thumb, and we're going to bring it in on four. So one, two, three, four. Took me a while. I had smoke coming out of ears when I finally got that.
One of the things, playing drums, we had to learn how to play different. And one of the good ones, to me, it was listening to get the rhythm of it. For example, if you do four against three, so one hand's playing four.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that rhythm. When I hear the two together, then I can figure it out. To me, it was just, that's how I would hear it. I actually hear it as one thing, and my hands automatically go to that. But that's a good exercise. That's hard. It's hard initially, but it's once you get it, it's easy.
Yeah.
But it teaches you that independence of your hands.
Absolutely.
So guitarists need to be drummers now.
I'd say, even when you sing, so like a bass player singing, try it. I mean, it's pretty hard. You can strum, you can sing, no problem. But I think as players start getting more into the understanding rhythm, like more like piano players, you're going to hear some phenomenal stuff coming up. And I think Andy McKee's probably at the forefront of that right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's a bunch of other players too. But
now the besides the, you kind of slap the bass string with your thumb.
Yeah.
Do you do pops?
I can. Yeah, I'll do pops
so
in different things.
That. Okay.
Yeah. Just depends on what I need to do. That's how I kind of construct a song. I've never been about gimmicks first and then composition second.
So right.
I've always tried to use the gimmicks for the sake of the composition and not gimmicks for the sake of the gimmicks, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the idea is I'll write a tune, and when it has to be a color that adds, then I'll bring it in. But I want to make sure I can try to write a memorable song like the Beatles song. And you know what? What I find interesting is that the techniques, so many young players are watching YouTube now and learning techniques very, very quickly. To develop a technique from the ground up takes a long time, but to relearn it from somebody is very easy.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all these young players learning the techniques. The big missing gap is they can't do any songwriting. They can't come up with these great melodies. And that's what I'm always striving for, is can I write a good song? And that's the hardest thing, especially to make it new and not heard of before, right?
Right. So. Well, I mean, I've heard a lot of people like Preston, and they're brilliant, and they do they tap and they do all this and they do the percussive thing.
Yeah.
But it's you're right. But your music is unique. I mean, what I'm hearing, I've never heard from anybody else.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. But the thing is, now for the new musicians, they're fortunate because there are artists like yourself. So they can hear that to as a springboard. it's amazing for me to hear your story because, you know, in the, you know, earlier days, I never heard anybody play like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I know there was some people that had tapped and stuff like that. You know, Paco did some interesting stuff. Yeah. And the flamenco guys were doing some interesting stuff, but nothing like what we're hearing now. And I think it's incredible.
Yeah, well, their nylon string's a whole different beast, right?
No, I had a Ben Woods on. He's a flamenco player. Yeah. And he takes heavy metal tunes and puts them into flamenco.
Nice. Yeah, sweet.
And he does a lot of interesting percussive things because he's working with a dancer usually.
Oh, yeah.
And it's interesting what they develop, and he's in a band called Mellow, Heavy Mellow, and they do, that's what they do. Very interesting stuff. But anyway, what type of strings and gauge? Do you use a light gauge or a heavy gauge? Or because you're hitting them pretty hard.
Yeah, it's, once again, it's a strategy with the guitars. If you're traveling lots, you take a different approach than when you're at home, right?
Okay.
At home, you might use like a standard set, which is 12 to 54, or a medium like 13 to 56. And for me, I do it a little bit differently. Depending on the guitar, I'll kind of work with it to the guitar to start singing. Now, when I travel a lot, like with this Yamaha, if I use 12 to 54, which are more comfortable to play, and I get in really humid environments, I'll start buzzing out. So what I'll do is I'll bring a 60 with me, and I'll do different things to try to raise that first, or I might put shims or whatever it takes. But right now I'm using Ernie Ball. I've been an artist with them for a while, and I wasn't with them in the beginning, but when they had this new aluminum bronze string, I just loved it.
So you're using those?
I think I got...
You like those?
I got half and half. I got phosphor bronze, and then I got like a 58... aluminum bronze, yeah. Yeah, they're great. I mean, this is a very bright guitar, and they kind of mellow out a little bit, I think. So I really, really like them. And
how old is that Yamaha?
This is probably about 3 or 4 years old. They had to replace this. I had this exact same model when I was in the UK. It got damaged. It took a hit, and it got the crack in the bottom lower bout lifted the glue like all the way around to the back of the guitar, so it was like about a half inch space. So I had like basically a wah-wah pedal going up and down with the guitar. So I put duct tape and held it down, and maybe the judges felt sorry for me, and that's why I won. But so when I got back home, I told them about that, and they just sent me another one. So,
well, do you for 3 or 4 years? I know you play a lot, but is it broken in? Do you think?
Well, it's yeah. I love it. Yeah, this is my.
I know you play a lot, so you probably you play a lot more than I do. So it takes longer now for me to break in a guitar, but they hold up pretty well. Then, in other words, the tapping and hitting that stuff, it's not.
Yeah,
for the most part, it's not damaging.
No. I mean, yeah, I put bruises and stuff like that. But, you know, the thing with this guitar, I mean, I have some really beautiful high-end guitars at home. I've actually got the first G4 fan fret Greenfield that became the Annie McKee model. So I had worked with Greenfield in the early days, and we got that 2-inch fan fret guitar. And it's, about an $18,000 guitar now. However, can I make that a really great stage guitar? It seems like the bigger the guitar, the harder it is to manage those lower frequencies on stage. So this guitar has been really great for me. And the beauty of this is that if I break it, the next one off the shelf will deliver just like this one. So I don't know.
That's true. Yamaha has always been a really electric or acoustic, at least what I've seen. They've always been consistent in all their models. That's one thing, they really have it down pat.
Yeah, when I go to Germany, I'll have a couple sent there from the German guys, and I'll get them and I'll take them on stage. I don't have to do anything to them. I might add the magnetic pickup a little bit to it.
Right.
But so I can rely on some consistency that way. And especially when your guitars get damaged or something goes wrong, you can always rely on that. If I had a custom-built guitar, you're in real trouble because now you're used to your beast and now you have to get something cheap to
get. Yeah, and also, too, I mean, it's not just, damage. A lot of guys, I mean, couple of months ago, there was a benefit concert for Tony McAlpine and somebody took Steve Vai's guitar. Now, you got it back, but they literally took one of his guitars. And, that's another thing you got to... I mean, I know a lot of people don't bring their old Martins now on tour, like Steven Stills. He doesn't do that anymore. He has newer guitars because if something happens, they can replace it.
Yeah. So there you go right there. Find a functional guitar and leave the beautiful ones at home.
And this isn't an outrageously expensive guitar. It's a midline, right?
Yeah, it's like $700-$800.
Yeah, that's a pretty decent price. They're really consistent. They're a good guitar. Yeah. And I presume you're nudging Yamaha to make a baritone, right?
I'm so on their case. Well, I actually took one of the earlier
Andy
models.
Armando.
Yeah.
And we're going to bug you at NAMM.
And then I won't have to use somebody else's.
Well, let's take a look at the baritone.
Sure.
And what I want to do right now is I'm going to play this song very – it's a very nice – it's just a sweet song, if I can say the name again, Sophrosyne.
Sophrosyne, yeah.
Sophrosyne?
Yeah.
And that's what that features the baritone, if I'm correct.
It does, yeah.
So let me play that while he grabs that guitar, and then we'll talk about this guitar and this really cool thing he has on the guitar, which is going to blow you away. So here's Sophrosyne. Great. Thanks. I love those harmonics. Those are just great.
That's a special little song for me. That one's for my little granny who just passed away.
Yeah, I read about that, and from what I looked it up, I did what you told me to do on there. It's ideal excellence in character and soundness of mind.
That's my granny.
That was my granny. Yeah. But that's a beautiful sound. And that's this guitar or another?
It's another guitar, yeah.
Another baritone. So what do you have here? What is this?
This is a Borg guitar. I won't give you the name what it is, but it's a Borg guitar from Scott, the Dire Harp guitar guy. And what's great about this is we've got this new little thing on it that I first got here today. Mm-hmm. It's called a Tonewood amp. And when you sit here and play with one of the things, you know, you just can't stop playing. Like, check this out.
Everybody, that reverb that you're hearing is coming out of the guitar. If right now he's like he was playing the Yamaha before, it's a dry sound. I just have the two mics. There's a little bit of reverberation naturally from the room. That reverb, that lush reverb, is coming from the guitar. It blew me away. I'd heard about this device, but I never had heard anybody play one. It's just great.
You get so inspired, right? Because Scott had this in a different tuning when I went to his place, and I just sat down for an hour and just wrote. So, yeah, if you don't need an amp or anything, and you get this huge sound, it's got other effects in it, like, you know, like a... Here, I'll dial some in. You got like a... Uh-oh. Uh-oh, what did I do?
That sounds great.
Uh-oh, what did I do? Cancel, there we go. Here we go, hall. Okay. So that's a room. Let me just get I'm going to give you a...
It's a little box. I will take a picture of it so you can see it. But it's a little box on the back of his guitar.
There's a delay. give you. Let me give
that's
you.
That's just amazing because it's basically generating the sound from the whole guitar. It's just and it sounds natural.
That's the delay again. I want to find this. It's a tremolo. Leslie.
Crazy. You can hear it. It's light.
Oh, you're gonna love this one. She got Ottawa. No amplifier, no pedals, man.
And lastly, I mean, yeah, you're just that's just amazing. It's coming out acoustically.
Yeah, and then there's overdrive.
Who makes that?
Tonewood Amp.
Tonewood Amp.
I'm gonna go to them at NAMM. Well, they'll be sharing a booth with Scott. With Dire Guitars, so make sure to check them out. I don't know what booth they're
in. Oh, I'm definitely going to check that out.
Oh, yeah.
Have to have them on for that.
I'm going to walk by that booth and kind of inherit one. Like, sneak it out there.
The let's go a little bit into it. So, how is this tuned? Is this tuned a fourth below?
I don't know what he's got this at. I just kind of I don't know. I just picked it up and kind of put it in my own tuning. So I went double drop D on it, which I'm not even sure what that.
Oh, okay.
Is.
So.
Let me just turn this baby off for a second.
Okay.
I'll just go back to the reverb. So what I played for you there was a little song I wrote called The Wall. That was back in my last album.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in a double drop D tuning. And initially I didn't record it with a baritone, but if you can hear it, it sounds real.
So just go through the open string so we know what you
sure.
have.
So I've just taken the lower E string from an E down to a D, and the high E string from an E down to a D. Mm-hmm. So you get a D, A, D, G, B, and D. Now, that would be on a standard six string. I don't know what we're on here. So, because you're down a fourth if it's B to B. So you have to...
So that isn't actually D, pitch D. That's
no, it's not a pitch D. It's just how the tuning would be relative on a six string.
Oh, okay. So it's lower. So I'm trying to think what the pitch is.
So everything would be a fourth
lower.
Fourth
low.
Yeah. That's if he's indeed tuned from B to B. So we're not sure about that.
Mm-hmm.
Some baritones.
And that's
C to
your
C.
main tuning that you use for the baritone, or do you do different ones?
No, on the new album, all three songs were on a whole different tuning, where they'd be like a C, A, D, F sharp, A, D.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, that's Sophrazine's in that song. Arrows Will Fly in that song.
Underneath. So was it Joni that got you into different tunings, or was somebody else?
No, just once I had made that mistake, I just started going down my own journey, right?
Right,
and,
right.
I never quite figured out anybody else's tunes. I never learned any Bruce Coburn tunes, and it's a shame because I should have learned some and just kind of did my own thing.
But it works. So, no, it really works.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been excited to create. I've not cared about being accurate or anything.
Mm-hmm.
The plan for me or the glory is when you're sitting in your bedroom noodling, making noise, and all of a sudden three notes appear that go, whoa, what's that? And then you can develop it.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time you're done, you'd have this magnificent feeling of this creation you created. Now, it might be subconsciously a commercial you heard and it sounds exactly like it,
mm-hmm.
but who cares? Because in the bedroom in that moment, it's like, wow, yeah. what a glorious moment, yeah. right? And you know that feeling, right?
Right, right.
So it's just magical.
Now, when you're using a baritone with a regular guitar, a regular concert pitch, any... rule or and when you're working with how do you set them up, do you to play them together, is there any insight on that? I mean, do you play differently on the regular guitar to make it fit, or do you just kind of layer as you go? Or
well, when you're doing live shows, I mean, the thing I've been learning is that, and it's lucky because it's built into me, is I have a bad memory. So when I get on stage, it's like I might have a game plan, and whatever game plan I had goes out the door.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I know that tuning can be a real problem on stage, so I have tuning strategies wherever I can, and that is between a song, instead of jumping to a radical tuning and talking too long and trying to get the neck to settle in, I'll do changes subtly. So I'll start off in the standard tuning, like I might play the song like The Rogue, and then the next song I might just do a single high dropped D from mm-hmm. E to a D, and then after that song I'll go to double drop D. And then after that, I'll go to Dadgad.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I'll go to these other tunings. So I'm tuning very little in between songs. That said, if I'm from like a rocky dance crowd, I'll have a whole mm-hmm. different strategy when I kind of go out. And
now, on some of the stuff that you played, I'm trying to remember the cut off the top of my head. You played some other guitars, electric.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember, was it Boy Meets Girl? You had Slide in there.
Yeah, I have a good friend named Tim Tweedale who Lee Ritenour was going to play on that song, but the timing just didn't work out. And so,
let me play that clip and show what you were doing there, and we can talk a little bit what you were trying to do there. And I think you're using the baritone on this one, too.
Absolutely, a deep baritone,
okay.
Yeah.
Boy Meets Girl. Really tasty stuff. So there. Now, who's playing? Now, you're doing a lot of different things in there. So
yeah, I'm playing baritone guitar, and that's actually a deep baritone. So it's tunes from A to A, that guitar.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure what tuning we were in for that, but yeah, I think on standard guitar it would be like Bad Gad.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a friend in Vancouver by the name of Tim Tweedale, who's like the our pride and joy to Vancouver for slide guitar, and he studied with Steve Dawson. And I had him on my last CD. And what's funny is that he sat down, we went to the studio, and he gave me a Weisenborn track and also the Dobro track. And he just played four tracks four times. And I couldn't decide what I wanted, so I just actually left all four in. And people were going, you can't do that. You can't have two. And I'm going, why not? Listen to all these fabulous licks. So I just went back and forth with phenomenal licks.
It's interesting because I couldn't figure out, is that electric or is that acoustic? It had a different... it was an interesting sound. It's very unique.
He's Weisenborn through, I think, a little amp, and they had reverb on him at the time, so we couldn't take that off. So I would have a different reverb on there, but yeah.
No, it sounded great. No, it was really, really good.
Yeah, tasty player. Very
We're already out of time.
Oh, no.
I told you it would go fast.
Oh, my goodness.
I just want to mention www.donalder.com, and the new album that we were playing clips is Armed and Dangerous. And you're heading off right now to the LA Mint, right?
You're
doing a gig right now there.
Yeah.
Anything else? And what's happening for you? I know you're going to be at NAMM. Is there another album in the works? Or are you? I know you just got this one out, but I mean, it's like...
That was a long overdue. I've got about three albums worth of material. I'm probably going to try and do a straight finger style album, and then a singing album, and then maybe a dedicated harp guitar album.
Oh, great.
So I'm working that. And this album was a lot of fun. It was dedicated to the Walking Dead team.
Yes, the Walking Dead.
The cover's got a guy with a guitar that would destroy all zombies. So,
It's a great album, and I recommend it. And you can get it pretty much everywhere, like Amazon, iTunes.
You bet.
You can, most of the major online radio record outlets.
Yeah, I say too.
And, we're just going to have you back. I just didn't even cover. I mean, there was so much more to cover. But I'm going to close with a clip from Dancing with the Spin Doctors with Billy Sheehan on bass and Sam Cartwright on drums.
Yep, you bet.
And I think you're doing some electric stuff on this too.
Yeah, we tried an acoustic at first, but when you hear how Billy rocks out, I had to switch gears and try to rival him. But he's a pretty tough guy to keep up with.
Well, I just want to thank you again for being on the show. It's a real pleasure to have you here, and we definitely will have you back. There's just much more to cover, and I'm going to go check you out. I'm going to go check out Tonewood Amps over at NAMM this week.
I'll see you there.
So everybody have a great week. We'll be back next week. This is Dancing with the Spin Doctors, and it's a great cut. Check this album out, Armed and Dangerous. Here we go.